did it the week before, so. Okay, welcome everybody to Planning Commission. Before we get into the agenda, we will start with a Pledge of Allegiance. And Brandon will lead us in that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Tucker. Okay, not thinking that we will actually have public comments, but before we get into our regular agenda, are there any comments not related to the other agenda items? Seeing none, we'll move on to the consideration of a site plan for Grammel Construction, 155 South, 750 West. And is Mr. Grammel here? Okay, and so we'll start with a presentation from Sherry, and then okay. We'll turn to you, Mr. Grammel.
Yep.
Okay, so this is in the new G&G subdivision. This is a 3.3 acre lot. It's zoned MD, and it will be located on the new street at 750 West. So that's currently under construction. This business is currently located on 1100 North, so they're moving to this new location and anxious to get started with construction as soon as that road is passable. So we're getting the site plan taken care of right now so they can get their permit submitted. We have evaluated the parking based on the required parking. So we have a specific category for construction contractors, yards, and business services. They're required to have one stall per 500 square feet of floor area in the building. With that requirement, the minimum stalls are 35, and two of those must be ADA accessible, which they have provided on their site plan. Move forward to that. So their minimum number is 35, with two of those being accessible. And the ADA stalls do meet the minimum requirement. They're required to have 10% landscaping, which they have exceeded at 13%. They're placing street trees along 750 West. And then the landscaping is going to be low maintenance with some low water use, mix of stone, rock, mulch, tree, shrubs, ornamental grasses, and flowers. The rear portion of the lot is outdoor storage for their construction equipment, which is being screened from the street view by the building, as well as by the 6-foot walls on the side of the building. And if you can't see it on the plan, they've got a wall right here, so they're very close. And then down here where the gate goes in. The gate can be chain link as long as it has a screened, is screened with the mesh. Let's see, how does it read? With a vinyl or fabric mesh screen. So that's one of the recommended conditions. Here is a view of the landscaping plan. So essentially they'll have their offices up front and then they have some shop area in the back, with parking in the back for employees. As far as the architectural review goes, it meets all of our standards. They had some amendments that they did on our first round of red lines just to get the parapets on the front facade so that it made that 2-foot variation every 60 feet at the minimum. The materials are high quality materials, stone and brick, and masonry as you can see. So they meet that, and they have the identified entryway with the cover on it. So the DRC has made a favorable recommendation on this with the three conditions. So the first was that the chain link be appropriately screened, or the chain link gate, excuse me, be appropriately screened with vinyl or fabric mesh. That they provide a shared drainage detention agreement or easement with lot 4. So they are proposing to do some shared drainage along that south property line with Mark Green, who will be building his construction business to the south. So they'll just need to make sure that they have an agreement in place for that. And then the engineer has asked that they add a note to the plans regarding a final survey of the detention elevations to ensure the installation has been completed as designed. So that's just a note that before we go out to do the final inspection, that the surveyors come back in and made sure that the elevation of the snout and the other features of the detention areas have been completed to the specifications design. With that, I will turn it back to you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for Sherry? While you're thinking about that, do you have anything that you want to add?
Nope. We're eager to get started. We got to be out of our place and moved in by the end of November. So,
okay,
we'll be over there pretty quickly. So,
I thought I saw somebody. Sherry, can you tell us a little bit more about 750 West, where that street starts from? Just like go to a vicinity map and outline the path of 750 West.
So this street right here is 700 West, and this is Redwood Road.
Uh-huh.
So you know where DAT's trucking goes in right here?
Right.
So the road comes in, will come into the side of this building, and I wish I could remember the name of the trucking company.
Action Resource.
Action Resource building. They're a tenant.
Yep.
Mr. Green owns that lot, and he leases that building to that business. So the road will be built down here. It's a dead-end street. It's a private street. So it'll be owned and maintained by the Owners Association of this.
Okay.
Not really a homeowners association, so a business owners association.
Yeah.
Mark and us.
Yeah. We have Mark and I. Mark and,
is it?
Mark and
Vermont.
It's still built to our standard.
Okay.
It's built to our minimum width. So that in the future, if they want to dedicate it as a public street, they can. They decided to go with it as a private street right now because of the issues with DATs and DATs not wanting to participate or straddling that property line.
Right.
So
right.
If in the future DATs wants access to that road, then they can negotiate with the Owners Association for whatever cost sharing and that they want to recoup, and then they could possibly dedicate it to the city.
Right.
This is the south lot, that plat that we already looked at.
It's the middle lot.
There's three.
There's
Green's
three.
Going to
there's four. The first section that Action is on is lot one. Lot two we've dedicated to Action because we took some of their square footage for their yard. So that second lot is Action's trailers right now. We are the third lot. Mark Green would be the last fourth lot up against Amcor's property.
And that yellow box is just an approximation. It's not.
It might look a little bigger than it is. That's
Gary,
what it is.
I thought in one of our last meetings that we had on this, that DATS was willing to go ahead and do something on the road with them.
So the way that worked out is in the beginning, DATS wasn't willing to do anything, and then they kind of came to an agreement that would let DATS move their move DATS driveway 15 feet to the west, so that it was the minimum 50 feet away from the intersection with the new street. When it came right down to it, DATS attorney drew up an agreement on that construction, where he wanted Mark Green to pay him. What was it?
$100,000.
$120,000.
Shut down at any time in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, during the construction, he would have to pay him $120,000 if even one truck showed up and couldn't pull into his.
Ouch.
Yeah.
His property, and so, obviously, Mr. Green was not willing to sign that agreement. So he came back, and we redesigned the road and pushed it further onto his own property, so it still meets the minimum 50, but now DATS won't be moving their driveway at all. They won't get their new free driveway that they would have gotten.
Yep. And I think part of that was the agreement that if that lot one ever had anything with Action, that would be adjusted with that roadway.
And so then part of the other agreement that we made with the city council on moving that road over was that there's a note on the plat that when that lot one, if the use changes, that they'll have to eliminate the access that they have on Center Street completely and get sole access from the new road on 750 West. So, and I know that they have a long-term lease with Mr. Green for like three or four more years, and so they'll be there for a few years, and then he plans on taking that building down and constructing something different at that location. But for the time being, that will remain. They'll move, they'll actually move their driveway, kind of cut it in half, and they'll come in one way from the back or one way from the front and then out onto 750. I don't remember which direction it was, but they'll enter one way and exit the other way because their building at that has bays that goes all the way through the building, so the trucks pull through the entire building. And right now they have to pull into the lot, pull clear back behind the building, flip a UE, and then go through the building that way. So this will actually be more convenient for them to be able to pull in, go straight into the bays, then pull out and get onto 750 and back out onto Center Street.
Yep, right on.
Yep.
Well, it's great to see one of these previously stranded parcels get access and be put to good use. If there are not any comments or questions from the commission, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission approve the requested site plan for Grumal. Now, is it Grumal?
Grumal, correct.
Okay, yep. That's what I thought. For Grumal construction at 155 South 750 West with the following condition. The chain link gate will be appropriately screened with a vinyl or fabric mesh screen, provide a shared drainage detention agreement or easement with lot 4, and number 3, add engineer's notes to the plans regarding final survey of detention elevations to ensure installation as designed.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Any comments on the motion? Okay, all in favor. Sorry. All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion is unanimous.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck with your project.
Yeah, good luck.
Can I just say how helpful your staff has been in working us through this process? We really appreciate it. We're in the city now. We want to remain. We like the location. And so it's worked out really well. So
thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we know we have an awesome staff.
Yeah.
Well, that was much more uneventful than
the last round last week.
All right.
Jerry says she's going to make up for it next meeting, though.
Maybe if these people get their corrections in.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the site plan for Weiniger's, or for the final plat for Weiniger's, but on Monday morning last week, he sent me the corrections, and he didn't send me any corrections on the plat, just the construction drawings. I'm like, I got to have the plat. He's like, well, can I? I'm like, no. I have to be able to review it. And if
the same
the
applicant?
Agenda item is final plat approval, I have to actually have a final plat.
Yeah.
Kind of right. Funny how that works.
Is it the same applicant, or do you have
yeah.
another?
Oh. I guess they're just busy. Everybody's busy. They have lots and lots of work, so the engineers are stretched pretty thin, and they forgot that one, even though I'd sent the red line corrections on December 6th to them.
They took Christmas off.
Apparently.
All right, so our next item is a discussion item looking at short-term rental code amendment, short-term rentals code amendment.
So if you will remember from a couple months ago when we did the accessory dwelling units, I also had this section of the code written for the short-term rentals, but we got the meeting got late and we decided to take that off of the review. And so I just wanted to bring this back to you for your review, and maybe we can move this one forward because I have it written already. So just to give you a little bit of history on short-term rentals, so these are your Airbnbs, your VRBOs, which I'm sure we've all, or most of us anyway, have stayed in. I've enjoy them myself. but right now, our code is silent on them. It doesn't say they're permitted. It doesn't say they're not permitted. And the advice across the state from the city and county attorneys is that if your code doesn't specifically say that they're prohibited, then they are permitted. So it's a property right that we have to allow. And so a lot of the cities have decided that the best course of action would be just to regulate them and make them a permitted use so that if we do have problems with some of the the bad renters, I guess you could say, the partiers or whatever. I know that some communities have problems when a house gets rented by, you know, 20 bachelors who are on a ski trip, and then they're really loud and they drink a lot of beer and throw beer over their fence and stuff like that, then it becomes a problem. And so this was my first attempt at drafting the short-term rentals. I took some other ordinances, and I hopefully picked out what I thought were the best parts of it, but all of that's open for discussion about how it might work or how you feel like it should work or changing anything. I'm not claiming to have written the best ordinance here, but I think it covers some of the major things that become problems. And so under this proposal, people who wanted a short-term rental would have to be required to get a permit. They would need to be owner occupancy of the dwelling for at least half of the year, so 183 calendar days per year. They could be rented to up to 4 unrelated individuals or 8 family members. And that matches what our code says right now for a family, is up to 4 unrelated individuals. So that would prevent people from renting to the 20 bachelors that are going to have a big party. Now, 4 bachelors can still have a big party, but or 4 married guys, I guess, if they were. I guess it doesn't really matter what their marital status is. Only allowing one STR per property. So let's say they had their house and then they had an accessory dwelling unit. They could choose one or the other. Could be the short-term rental. They couldn't rent both of those two structures out as short-term rentals. They would have to pick one of the two as their short-term rentals. It does provide for them to allow them to use their accessory dwelling units as a short-term rental. And if they are there on the property and they have an ADU, they can use it 365 days. So they don't have to have some other occupant in there for a half of the year. They have to have a parking plan, and they have to have off-street parking, so they need to have a way to tell their clientele where they're supposed to park, make sure they're not parking on the street, make sure they understand the rules about street parking when there's snowstorms or during the winter months, things like that. They need to show and have emergency contact file with the city, as well as providing emergency contact information in a visible location on the site. So a lot of the cities that have done this have required, you know, there's an information sheet, and that has to be posted in the short-term rental, sort of like what you would see in a hotel room on the back of the door that tells you, I don't know what it tells you, but it tells you things that some lawyer told you to tell, they told the hotels they had to tell us, but it's something like that, that would say, here's the city police, you know, dispatch number, here's fire dispatch, here's the owner's name and phone number if you have a problem, or their handyman or their manager, whoever it is. You know, here's some basic city contact information if there should be an emergency on the property when the owner is not there. Clarifies that the owners are still responsible for the maintenance of the property and snow removal, even when they are renting it, if they haven't provided for the tenants to do that. And then, like I just said, posting all of those things in the unit. And then it provides some penalties for violations. So certain number of violations you get, then you could lose your permit to operate one if we receive too many complaints that you're renting to people that are causing disturbances in your neighborhood. So, do you have any questions? Thoughts?
I have a question. The 10 consecutive nights, how was that figure picked?
I think that was just out of some of the other ordinances, so I'm not.
I personally feel like that is maybe too restrictive.
Okay.
Especially if you rent by the week, it almost makes it hard to rent by the week. Then you'd limit it to 1 week.
Right, if somebody wants to have.
If we bumped it to 14, and then you could do at least a 2 week rental.
Which line was that one on?
It's 55. Does everyone feel good about 14?
Do you think even higher?
Every time I have done an Airbnb, it has been longer than 14 days. Every single time I've done one.
If you come from, you know, far away.
And we take our family back to New York every summer, and we stay usually between 3 and 5 weeks in an Airbnb there. And so that, it feels short to me.
So maybe we should make it 5 weeks.
Well, I just feel like
What's the argument?
What's the downside of that?
Did you draw that from another ordinance?
Yeah, it probably was. Because I looked at Sandy City's ordinances. I think I looked at Park City's, Salt Lake City.
I have a neighbor in my circle that does this, and they do like a house swap with somebody in San Diego twice a year, and they are gone for usually about 4 weeks. And I actually would prefer that one group is there the whole time than they Airbnb it out 4 times in that 5 weeks that they're there. So I see a longer term option as kind of a more settled thing for if it's available. I'd rather have one group there for the whole time instead of 4 different ones.
The party groups don't stay for 4 weeks.
They are not staying with all their 6 children and
So how would you feel about 45 days? That would be 6 weeks.
I feel fine about that.
Sure.
Yeah, the two renters that they have had come did come from Europe, and then they used it as a base, and they went down to Moab for a weekend, and
I wish I could take a vacation that long.
We need to be Europeans.
Do you think we should also put in there a little flexibility to make it on approval, for longer?
At what point is it then a rental? That would be
if the owner still has to live in it half the time.
186, is that what it was? 183?
But why not have the same person for all 183? What's the
difference?
That seems to if the root cause of this is occupant stability, it seems like that would be a downside.
Yeah, so normally you wouldn't even if they were going to rent more than 30 days, that would be technically a lease, and you wouldn't even need to have a short-term permit, because that anything over that would be just you're renting your house out.
That was my question from the packet, is what short-term is, how that's defined.
Most codes up until the past, that I've seen, every time anybody's ever asked, and maybe if I was quoted by the Libertas Institute when they made a phone call, was that anything under 30 days would be considered a short-term rental, because 30 days or more would be you're getting into where you're leasing to a long-term individual, and then that wouldn't be a short-term rental. But we don't have short-term rentals in our code, and so...
Is there the Airbnb site allow you to go longer without signing a rental agreement?
The last one we did was 5 weeks, and they didn't make us sign anything.
Airbnb,
it was all transaction went through Airbnb.
I don't know, I've only done 14 days. That was the longest.
I think 45 is good. I think if they want to go longer than 45, they can use a rental agreement instead of a short term
and just lease it as a...
Okay. Anybody else have another thought on this one? Okay.
I think this looks amazing. I am amazed that you wrote, not that I don't think you're great, but you wrote this, and it's really good, and it makes sense.
I plagiarized a lot of it.
Either way, it's fabulous, and it's good work. Thank you for bringing it to us.
I don't want to take credit for that, but I did organize. I picked
the credit.
Some of the best stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Pick the credit.
What about the 4 and 8? So I'm just exploring, okay? But let's take a big home on the east that has 6 bedrooms.
And you want to take multiple families.
Right.
That's what I...
Mm-hmm. We do one in Eden every summer, and we take way more than that because it's a giant... house.
We
do it as a family reunion.
Yeah, we did one in St. George with 40 people, and it had 7 bedrooms.
That's the one we do in Eden.
And a room that was dorms for the grandkids. It was...
Same thing. Maybe not 40, but 4 and 8 seems pretty small.
I like the four just because I don't think we want
maybe
a bunch of unrelated people coming.
Yeah, because yeah, then you get like a hostel.
Yeah.
Because it could be.
But I do think that the eight, instead of that, maybe it could be like two per bedroom or two per queen bed. I don't know. I just, like, we're looking for one right now, and it sleeps six. It's got two bedrooms and two couch beds.
So what if we said that this was the regular standard, and then anything above that, if they wanted to be something that was bigger, then they would be required to have additional parking? I mean, because that's what I'm concerned about.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true.
Is if grandma and grandpa rents the house, right, and they have five kids, and those five kids and their husbands and wives bring all of their five kids, right? So now we've got four or five cars, maybe your teenagers bring some cars.
That's what happens when we go up there to Eden. We take, like, seven cars.
Right. Well, so, so then we would look at, you know, does your parking plan meet this? Or
that's
maybe
a good idea.
You know, if it's a bigger really one, it's a conditional use.
Even the eight family members is probably four cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the one in St. George that we stayed at, where we all stayed, had off-street parking for eight cars. Maybe it was just six, but it had a three-car garage with three loading spots and then one on the side. So
could you add in there, put, or if more, if adequate parking is available?
Or we could just take the eight out, because really the issue really is the four
number of
unrelated.
Yeah.
Four or more unrelated.
And they still have to provide, gain approval for the a parking plan. So
right. So they still have to show, okay, this is how many we're going to advertise it sleeps. I mean, this is what, maybe they have to state what their maximum occupancy is and show that they have a parking plan that.
Okay.
I think that's good.
All right. So strike the up to eight piece of that, and the limitation is just the four unrelated individuals. Okay.
And then a waiver element too, or like an exception element built in to the code that says, you know, or upon application.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that I would change it to say that they would be required to state their maximum occupancy on the application, and then have a parking plan that provided adequate parking for that occupancy level. And so maybe we do that based upon number of bedrooms. You know, maybe it's, I don't know, a half of parking space per bedroom or something. I mean, what do you, because I don't want to go overboard because they have four bedrooms, so now they've got to have eight parking spaces or something, but.
Half a space per bedroom, sure.
That seem about right?
Yeah.
And I think that when they advertise, if they say this one has two parking spots, people with more than two cars maybe would be like, oh, I don't want that. You know, maybe it's something the market would take care of.
This is good that you guys have some experience renting some of these places, because that helps.
Well, every single one of these are by permit, so you don't have to worry about, I guess, setting a threshold on everyone. You're gonna evaluate every single
right.
individual case, so we can approve that every specific house for the number of parking vehicles that are allowed.
So if they come and say we want to rent to 20 people, we have one parking spot.
Yeah, then we're gonna say
deny it.
That's not gonna be that's not adequate. And then the other part is too, is so if they habitually rent to somebody, to people that bring five and six cars, but they only have three parking spaces, the neighbors are going to let us know when that's a problem. And then we can go out and check it out and say, oh, yep, they've been doing this. And we can talk to the landlord and say, look, you really need to regulate this a little bit better, or you're not going to have a license to do this.
To your knowledge, has there been complaints about Airbnb businesses in North Salt Lake?
No.
To date?
No. I haven't had any. I haven't received any. So to my knowledge. So I don't really see that. Oh, well, I'm going to take that back. There is one. And that comes from a private HOA who has a gentleman that is renting out his condo somewhere close to this area in a new townhome community. And the neighbors complained because the tenant or the owner doesn't let the renters park in the garage. He has them park in the visitor parking space. So there's always that, but that's all in their HOA, and it's in their CCNRs that they're not allowed to have short-term rentals. And so that is a civil matter for their HOA to enforce.
Which we have a provision in there on the conflict with the HOA.
Yeah.
Did that come from somebody's?
I thought about that. I don't want to be involved.
Not involved would be to take it out, though, and not have them certify that they're in compliance. Just leave it up to the HOA to enforce it.
What I don't want to do is issue a permit to somebody
clearly
who's going around their HOA.
Or using that as a club to to the HOA and say, well, I got a permit.
Yeah. And so I don't want to be their enforcement mechanism, but if I think there's a fine line, we can at least communicate, hey, you've got somebody that's in your HOA that's going to be doing this, make sure that it's okay. Because I don't like the calls that I get. Well, you gave them a permit, and our HOA doesn't allow it. So if they have to obtain the signature, then it's not on me anymore.
Do we have any other instances where the application is similar to this with the business license and then the notarized affidavit? And what would be what's the cost for this?
So I haven't decided what the cost would be. I've got the penalties in here, but not the cost of the permit. And, you know, one thing I can tell you about our city council is they don't like costly permits. So if I were to say just waiver, I mean, a guess would be maybe like 20. I mean, because it's like a home occupation, in my opinion, and we would charge $25 for that. So to me, it's a minimal permit. We don't want to make it so cumbersome that they're not going to come in and get their permit, and they're just going to do it on the side. So I would say either free or $25, because it's just more important that we know about it so that when dispatch gets a call, they know, oh, look, that's on our list. We know that's a short-term rental, and they kind of know what they're getting into when they go for a, you know, disturbing the peace call or something, and they're not surprised when they get there. Or that we have a, you know, we have somebody to call, a landlord that says, hey, you have a disturbance at your short-term rental here. We have their contact information that we can let them know so that the landlord can deal with whatever needs to happen beyond the police just telling him to keep it down, you know. So that would be my guess what the fee would be, somewhere around $25, just based on what the city council has done in the past. We like to be business friendly. And I don't really see our community as a big, I mean, we have, this is from October, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like, looks like about 10 that were advertised back in October. For a different Airbnb. So those are the ones with the little dollar signs on them. Those are the rooms that are for rent, or the entire house is for rent. There's not a lot. I don't see our community being a big draw for it. Now, Park City, obviously, you know, 50% of, if not more, of their buildings up there are rented out this way. For ski season during the summer and during the winter. We're not that close to any resorts. We're close to downtown. We're close to the airport. So you might have some business people or people that are visiting friends that, you know, want to stay close to downtown for whatever activities. But I don't see our community becoming a big draw for these. So I really don't think we'll have more than just a dozen or... I mean, there could be more. I guess they could become more popular, but Airbnbs aren't everybody's thing, to be the renters anyway. I might go rent one, but I wouldn't run one in my house. There's a difference. I don't want to be that person. And I live in a resort area.
What's that?
And I live in a resort area, and I don't want to rent to strangers.
I wanted to just discuss the nameplate sign on 92, where it says that it has to be on the exterior of the main entrance. Could that be something that is, like, when you have a short-term rental there, or is that something that needs to always be fixed to your door? Because if I was going to do a couple a year, I don't want my name and phone number on my front door the whole rest of the year.
And what's the benefit of that versus, I mean, I think there's almost a security.
Yeah,
Is that on the inside of the door?
This is the outside.
I think it's so that the police know who to contact if there's an issue.
But we also have emergency contact files information on file right now, what we take with business licenses. So I'm not sure. I don't know what city that one came from or why they thought that was important. I'm not sold that that's necessarily important either.
Yeah, I could totally get rid of that.
And maybe in the future, if we find that it's a problem contacting people with just emergency contact information on file, we can change it.
Yeah. To me, it's more important that the tenants on the inside have that contact information than somebody on the outside.
Right. That's my thought.
That's a good catch.
Yeah.
That's a good one to come out. All right. Anybody else need more time on this one or have any comments that you haven't given yet? And obviously no motion, right? You've got
right, because we would have to have, we have to have a public hearing first.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to move on. If everybody's good to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Our last item is the approval of minutes from January 8th.
Which I think you deserve a standing ovation over there for these minutes.
Yeah, here.
So good. that was a lot of minutes to sort through. Did great.
This meeting needs a nickname. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
I know that this planning commission is not about like self-reflection, but I got home and I explained both sides to my husband and said, this is what's important here, and this is how they were doing it, and this was what was important here. And I was like, Ted was right. People can disagree, and still not, someone doesn't have to be wrong when you disagree. And I was like, really, I know I'm 47, but like, look what I learned in our planning commission meeting. We should write a children's book about it or something.
Yeah, I like that.
Natalie learns to disagree. And we could still be friends. It
seems, given the national political climate, it should be just the wall.
Yeah. Are there any changes to the minutes?
I just noticed a couple of typos. One is on line 406. There's a letter, a number 0 instead of a parenthesis. And then there's a random T on line 472, but I didn't see anything else.
Good catches. If there are not any other changes, is there a motion?
What was the second line you said?
The random T on
right there.
Line
472.
472. Oh. Also on line 474, I just caught this. So the motion that passed on line 474, it should say the vote was 4-3 in favor and the motion carried instead of against motion carried.
Yeah, when I first read that, I was a little confused, and then I thought she meant 4-4 and 3 against, but I think it's clear if you put your change in.
Yeah. Or it could just say 4-3 motion carried. Maybe it doesn't need a word there.
Right.
Oh, and sorry, line 9, it should be personal conflict instead of personnel conflict. I was an English minor, whatever.
That one was my fault. I added that, so. It's synonyms anyway.
Fair motion?
I move that we approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes for January 8th, 2019 as amended.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Unanimous. All right. Oh, sorry. Look at me. I skipped right over the report on City Council actions on items recommended by Planning Commission.
We are flexible. We can move things around. It's easy. So last week's City Council meeting was interesting.
Like more interesting than us?
We left here at 11.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Okay, so we're not the most dysfunctional. Don't put that in the minutes.
Yeah, their agenda was just really, really long. Nice. Just to set the tone of the meeting, it started with a gentleman who moved to the Foxborough Terrace apartments from somewhere back east. And he got up in the public comment section, and he had a 2-page typed letter, front and back.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
That he read about how he moved here. He got here after driving 1,700 miles, parked his car, unpacked, went in and went to bed, and then they came out to go grocery shopping. I mean, he went into all sorts of details, if you've known a lot of people from the east, like very dramatic, and about how cold it was, and he was shivering, and his car was missing because of predatory towing. And then he went on to talk about how we should pass an ordinance.
Oh,
about
we should have a predatory towing ordinance because Foxborough North is a total mess. People are jerks.
The HOA part. Well, I don't understand why the HOA is hiring those types of
people. Well, and that's the whole thing is, like, I have a friend who lives there, and she had her son and daughter come and visit her. She's older. And they parked in visitor parking, and because they didn't have a permit, their cars were towed. Like, apparently in some of the HOAs, you have to have a permit to park in visitor parking.
Yes, that's true.
And I'm totally not running for HOA anything, but we should fix it, because...
Well, I wouldn't want to... This is kind of a funny story. So they had a couple of police detectives that went... I don't know if it was in Foxborough or where they went, but they went... And they parked the car, their two cars, to go in and visit with somebody that they were on a case, and they were their undercover cars, and they came out, and their cars were both towed.
Well, I was visiting teaching once, and I was looking out the window as they were hooking the tow truck up to my car, and I'm like, "We've got to go. The meeting's over. I hope you're doing well." And I ran out and got my car.
What's the racket? They're charging so much to get them back, and then do they split that with the person reporting?
See, the thing is, like, the HOA will hire tow companies.
To monitor.
Oh, okay. And so then they'll drive around. Like, they were saying in some of the, like, in Foxborough Terrace, it's something like after midnight or something. The tow trucks will be there, and they will look at every single parking. If you're not in your assigned spot, if you're license plate doesn't match the one that's supposed to be in that spot, then they will tow that vehicle.
With no warning or anything. Complaints about parking in a new townhome
put up with that, though, rather than just a report it.
The HOA hired them to do that.
And the HOA keeps saying, I just go on the Facebook page every once in a while, they keep saying, it's not us, it's the city towing you because you're of the snow removal. And I'm like, no.
No, it's not.
Because we've gotten tickets in front of our house. I mean, we've lived here 20 years. We've gotten tickets in front of our house 3 or 4 times for parking on the street. But they've never towed us. And there's a car that's been parked on 900 North forever, and they're just plowing around it and leaving it tickets. So
yeah, it's not the city. It is the HOAs that are doing it. So...
And the HOA is usually residents.
Right.
it's made up of their you know, their board is the residents. So
that's I mean, why would they put up with it?
I don't know.
The residents would
at least in the like in Foxborough Terrace Apartments, that's an apartment complex.
Yeah,
so
that's not
the management doing it. And I know that, I mean, the guy was saying it was $225 to get his car back, and the management company gave him that much off of his rent because of that. Because he's like, I just barely got there. I hadn't been told where my parking space was. My, you know, I don't know. Part of that for me is kind of going, well,
that
are you sure that wasn't in your leasing documents? And, you know, I know they give you a big stack of things. So, like, the attorney's right in that little tiny small print. I'm sure somewhere in there it was telling him where he was supposed to park, but you're tired and whatever. But I do think it's wrong too. But anyway, that so that kind of set the tone for the meeting. And then it went on and just went on and on. We had a gentleman come from, well, a ranger, I guess they're a ranger, from Antelope Island State Park, and then a guy who's with the Dark Sky Utah Association and wanted to talk about our street lighting and ordinances on dark sky so that people who like to watch the stars can see the stars. And
I
want to know what you think about dark skies and street lighting.
I thought our new street lights we've been approving are
our new street lights are but as you if you've been out in Foxborough or up along Eagle Ridge Drive, we have those acorn lights.
Yeah, that are capped.
They're capped, but still they shine out this direction instead of, you know, shining down. And so
I think, honestly, I would prefer more street lights. And the church by my house, I just wish that it had more lights because the parking lot is always pitch black.
The issue is the type of light, because you want the light to go in the right place.
Yeah,
so
it
if you have
directed.
More lights that are shining it in the right spot so that you have the pool of light to the next pool of light, you know, then it works right. But if you just have lights that shine out, they don't really light the ground where you're walking or make you feel any safer. So anyway, that was an interesting presentation. So the city council has asked me to evaluate our ordinances and report back to them, so we might be doing something with dark skies. I don't know for sure how that will go. As far as the other items, Brianna, you were reappointed.
Yes. I'm so glad I made it through. after the ruckus I caused right before. I should have laid low last meeting, right?
It was unanimous, so there was no fear in that at all. And then on our agenda items, so the city council hated Hepworth. At 150 North.
Really, our P district, they hated it.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
What was the?
But it's like part of their plan.
Nay.
Hmm.
How did so it failed at council?
It was tabled.
Oh, it was tabled. Okay.
So, it was tabled. I've had some subsequent conversations with at least one council member who he wants to see the drawings of duplexes that they first started with, their first idea, and then if they're as awful as I say they are, he wants to take that with the drawings that you guys recommended and go talk to a few of the neighbors over there to see if anybody really cares.
So the objection, I mean, it seemed pretty consistent with the plan. That's why we didn't object to it, I thought.
Which is really strange to me when I say this out loud. They felt like the architecture was too modern. To me, it's very classical architecture. But I think it was the lack of individuality between the units. So I think they would have liked to see something that looks more like Chesham, like with pitched roofs and different colors in between
the
units.
Oh, I thought they went above and beyond to specifically to match.
And I thought if you extended it all the way down the block, it was good, across from the park, it would have been great.
So, needless to say, they want to, and the developer made a really good argument about, well, if you do duplexes, now I've got six more driveways on the street, and that's more conflict than you would have with this, and I think it will still pass. I just think it needed a little more.
The same public
No public showed up.
No public
to
showed
the city
up.
Council.
So we got all the wrath and approved it. They got none. And
right. And one council member does live in that neighborhood. And so.
Oh, yeah, James.
Yeah, he hates it worse than anybody. So.
But he hates of course he did.
Yeah.
He doesn't vote for almost any multifamily project, so.
Having living in.
But I still think, I think it will pass eventually. I think we just need to do a little more work on it, but.
And the one with the, and the one with the chain link fence versus the block, that didn't go to.
That didn't go to them.
That's all us, man.
That's all us.
I drove by there the other day, and the thing is still full of cars for sale. So
yeah.
He must. The guy must have really been in a big hurry.
Well, he had he has a different used car dealer in there right now than the original used car dealer. This guy's just a shorter term.
He's temporary until.
Yeah, until he gets a good long term.
Well, he made it sound like they're ready right now to move their stuff in.
Okay, and so just checking any other report on city council actions?
Yeah, so there will be a couple of other things coming. The apartments at Foxborough Marketplace, they can't afford to build those anymore with all those amenities that they had planned that are under their development agreement. So they came to the city council last week to ask them to consider amending the development agreement for a different type of apartment buildings.
For like crappy apartments?
But they shifted
probably.
The numbers of bedrooms too, right?
Yeah, and,
yeah,
with
and
more
the unit number went up by
bedrooms.
25.
So the city council is going to do a tour of these other apartments in Farmington, and they're thinking about it. If the city council is agreeable to considering a modification in the development agreement, then they'll send them to you first with the site plan and for a recommendation on that. But they haven't indicated whether they're in favor or not in favor of it quite yet.
Okay, so my first 6 years on the Planning Commission were 16 years ago, and they've been trying to put crappy apartments there since the dawn of time. So I don't know what that means, just that.
They're going to walk in and see you and be like, you're still here? Oh, we're never going to make this happen.
And I just, you know, I'm
and
not surprised.
Say, no, my town.
Yeah, you know, then I read all the posts in the Foxborough Facebook page about it. Well, a lot of them. Anyway.
Are you a member of the Foxborough Facebook page?
I'm a silent member, yes.
Nice. They're super crazy.
I just watch. 1 week you're complaining about people whose dogs bark, and the next week you're complaining about people who call on your dogs barking and you have the dog catcher taken.
There's like some real libertarians out there who are like, don't ever call about anything.
Yeah.
And then there are people who are like, we'll just make your dog shut up and stop driving your van really slowly down my street.
Or really fast.
So
they make a really cool device that you can buy, and it will sense the dog's barking and send out a dog whistle.
Well, there's a shock collar you can put around them, too, when they bark.
Well, this is on
the
neighbor's dog. So you can put it right at your fence.
Never heard of that.
Drive them
not
away
that I have any experience with that, but it works.
I got 10 of them.
Does it work? Does that really work?
It trains the dog to not bark.
If I could get a machine to train my dogs, that would be great.
I don't have a dog, but I have a neighbor who has a dog.
Okay. Yeah, they used to come every time I went in my backyard. It just drive me crazy. So I researched and got.
Smart.
I actually have two of them. And set them up right at the fence. They
well,
come
we
over
got a cat, and if it starts barking, I'm going to shoot it.
Mine too.
That's a good note to end on. All right. Good meeting, people. We are adjourned.
And I apologize for being late. There was a train that was there for like.
Yeah.
Ever.
Forever.
We voted on some really important.